You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly old permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Gonna have a good day here aboard the mothership as we always do. Good morning, and we're happy to be here, and we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. How we doing? How was your weekend, everybody? Coming up this hour on the show, we've got your best audio of the day, and we'll break down the big comeback victory by the Pelicans last night over the Boston Celtics. Also in 40 minutes, what really happened to Deion Stuff? Deion Sanders with his coaching debut yesterday for Jackson State and claims that his stuff was stolen during the game, and then his school claimed that it wasn't stolen and now it might have been stolen. And it's a really weird situation. But we begin with the Carolina Panthers, which is interesting, right? Because Carolina has made a couple of moves in the last couple of days which look directly tied to bringing in Deshaun Watson. They made a couple of cap hits. Kawan Short and Trey Boston both got cut. And you say, DA, what's up with that? Why does that matter? Well, by releasing Short, who played in five games in the last 2 years, it cleared nearly $10 million in cap room. Getting rid of Boston cleared another $3.5 million, which can be used since June 1, once June 1 rolls around. So in a couple of months, you could use that $3.5 million. They also released Stephen Weatherly and their punter. That saved them another nearly $8 million. They also converted a portion of their center's base salary into a signing bonus, adding another $4.6 million in cap space. All of these moves adds up to the Panthers having an additional $26 million in cap space this week. They added $26 million in cap space this week. They now are roughly $40 million clear of the cap. $40 million clear of the cap. Huh. Why is this interesting? Because this is not happening in a vacuum. David Tepper, their owner, is one of the wealthiest owners in the NFL. In fact, I believe he is the wealthiest owner in the NFL. He bought in when Jerry Richardson was forced to sell 4 years ago, and he's worth a lot of cash. And reportedly, Tepper is sick and tired of having mediocre quarterbacking, and that what is going on with Teddy Bridgewater in Carolina is not good enough for him. He is building beautiful complexes. He's building beautiful practice facilities, and he wants to build a brand new stadium as well. But he realizes to get the buy-in from the community, he needs to win, and to win, he needs to have a franchise QB. And Tepper apparently knows that the only way he's going to do that is by clearing this cap space to go out and get Deshaun Watson or draft one of these guys, and the Panthers don't have a high enough draft pick to do that. He gave Matt Rhule all of that cash in all of those years, and now he is fishing for the big kahuna, the QB. So are the Carolina Panthers smart? Are they wise in trying to do this to make a run at Deshaun Watson? Well, We had John McClain on the show last week. Now, McClain has covered every game in Texans history. He's covered Houston football since the 70s and the Love You Blue Oilers. So the man knows his NFL in Houston, and he thinks that the Texans have no inclination to trade Deshaun Watson, no matter how disgruntled he gets, no matter what types of things that he says or his agent says, no matter how much frustration that he shows publicly, that Deshaun Watson is not going to get traded because they are going to play hardball and that they're going to force him to come back and accrue his service time in 2021. And maybe that's only four games, but they're going to refuse to trade him in this offseason. Now, if that's the case, and the Panthers are clearing all this cap space for an ill-fated run at Deshaun Watson, you might say, well, look, that's such a loss. It's a mistake. But I actually don't think that it is. I actually think this is a smart play by the Panthers, because either A, you go all in to try to get Deshaun Watson, and you do that by coughing up the draft picks and making sure you have the cap space to absorb him. So if you're going to do this, you better be all in. I hate these half feet in, half feet out, straddling the line. Well, if this falls through, look, if you want to go bold like acquiring Deshaun Watson, you better go all in. So get ready. Are you ready to give up those draft picks? Are you ready to give up those players? Are you ready to give up that cap space? You better be ready to do so. Don't let anything like not having your punter on the roster or a guy that's only played in five games over the last 2 years hang you up because of what that might be. You better go all in. So I like that. But also, there's only one other way to do this, and that is to crater, bottom out, and to get one of those top five or top 10 draft picks next year to be able to draft your next guy. Now, next year's not going to have a Trevor Lawrence, and next year might not have the group of quarterbacks that are going to be available this year. But, you know, that's the way to play this, because if you keep going 7-9 with a reasonable team, it's going to be hard to get there. Now, the good news is for the Panthers, they don't exist at a place this year in the draft where you can't move up. It's not like they're totally out of the running. They're at number 8. And so will they have one of the top two or three quarterbacks at number 8? Probably not. I would imagine the top two are gone of the top two or three picks. And that the top three, so let's say that's Fields, Trey Lance, and Trevor Lawrence, are probably all gone by the top 5, I would think. So I think the Panthers are just outside of that at number 8. But at number 8, you also have the ability to move up to number 5 or move up to number 4. I would think, by trading away a couple of picks as well. So, in other words, I think if you're the Panthers and you're big game hunting here, the fact that you're slicing guys that are not crucial members to winning, it is fine. I think it's fine. I think it's smart. I think this is the way that you have to set up your chessboard. Now, is Matt Rhule the guy? We'll see. I mean, you know, year number 1 did not have Christian McCaffrey. They were, I think, more competitive than many people would have assumed through the first 3 quarters of the season. Didn't have a great roster, and they're trying to build something from the bottom. So you don't want to trade away a bunch of draft picks either. But I think if you are going to make this run at Deshaun Watson and you slice all of this cap space, you're not doing this without having that in mind. We're going after that cat. We're going after that guy. We're going after that quarterback. I don't think that this is done in a vacuum, that you're now $40 million under the cap and you just cleared 26 of it in a weekend without having your eyes on the prize. And I think there's pressure on that front office in Carolina to get this thing done with Watson. Again, you need 2 to tango. And will the Texans do it? Who knows? That's up to the weirdness of Jack Easterby, the bizarre relationship between Nick Caserio and the front office and Deshaun Watson's unhappiness and Cal McNair and all of these things that it's impossible to know how they think, because Jack Easterby is a quack and he has run that franchise into the ground. But I think Tepper is applying some major pressure on his front office to get Deshaun Watson. And Deshaun Watson and Christian McCaffrey, pretty enticing proposition, actually. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, and Twitter, DA on CBS. How about the comeback yesterday by the New Orleans Pelicans? Wow. They're down 24 points, and this is not an easy thing for the Wizard of Watch DA Andrew Kaplan to hear, but boy, this could be the lowest point of the Celtics' already low season. Boston's just a 500 team, 15-15, and they had a 24-point lead, 24, over the Pelicans yesterday. And then New Orleans started chipping away. And by the time we get late in the fourth quarter, the Pelicans actually hold the lead, and it takes a great play at the buzzer by Jason Tatum to even send it to overtime. And then in overtime, New Orleans prevails 121-15. This tells us, to me, quite a bit about the Pelicans. Number one, this is one of those old school, one to grow on moments. Remember back in the 80s, the promos, the shooting star, Michael J. Fox with the soft lighting, telling you don't do drugs, one to grow on. This is one to grow on for the Pelicans. They're obviously a young team. They're obviously still trying to figure out who they are. They're obviously still trying to put it together. The Celtics have a 24-point lead on you. Zion Williamson, Lonzo Ball, and Brandon Ingram go to work. Zion has 24 of his 28 points after halftime. He gets 10 rebounds, 4 assists, and a block. Ingram starts shooting daggers from down the from outside, from downtown, finishes with 33. And if you ever thought that Zion was just an athletic monster, that he was just a beast, that he was just kind of a attack-the-rack kind of guy, watch highlights from last night's game or watch this game on replay. Zion's play and his effectiveness is happening without the basketball. It's happening with positioning in the low post. It's happening on tip-ins. It's happening on putbacks. It's also happening when he is slicing through defenders and his footwork is brilliant around the paint and towards the basket. He's not just a, if you clear out, he's going to attack the rim. Zion is a great basketball player. He really is. He doesn't get enough credit for that. But this team comes to life. They start believing. And once this comeback is on, the bench is up and cheering and the body language has turned and they're into it. And there was a small amount of fans in the building as well in New Orleans last night. And so the fans are getting into it. They're kind of vibing it and feeling it. And then Tatum makes this great play at the end of regulation to tie it and to send it to overtime. And that easily could be where the win comes out of the Pelicans. And you say, boy, we fought this hard, but ultimately, it's the Celtics who have, designs on going to the NBA Finals. And instead, they come out and they play the better overtime. And they win by 5. And the Pelicans keep the foot on the gas. And that was a really impressive performance by a young team still trying to figure out who it is and how to do these types of things. That is one of those signature victories where you remember when things may have started turning for you. And you remember that game, if you're the Pelicans, you start to draw from. And moving forward, remember the game against the Celtics? Remember what you did, Z? Remember what you did, Brandon Ingram? Remember what you did, Lonzo? Remember how we did that, those big plays? That gives you confidence. That gives you growth. That gives you maturity. That gives you the experience to do those things again. That was a hell of a win for New Orleans. And another crushing loss for the Celtics. I mean, we've talked about the lack of defense, the pathetic nature of the Celtics' defense all season long, but blowing a 24-point lead to New Orleans last night, that is the lowest of the low. 855-212-4CBS, Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back here on the show, your best audio of the day, that includes the Brooklyn Nets riding high after another victory, and Clayton Kershaw being asked about his future in Los Angeles after this season. He's due to become a free agent. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
CBS.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Remember to watch the show, won't you? Watch us at watchda.com. That's available on any device. We are streaming. You can watch the simulcast there. No sign up, no cable provider needed. Or on Twitch. Watch us live as well using the CBS Sports Radio channel on Twitch. We begin with Brooklyn Nets head coach Steve Nash as the Nets defeat the Clippers last night. And now we're on a six-game win streak, five of those on the road. Here's Steve Nash.
We've been willing mentally, physically, and emotionally to lay it on the line every night. And I know that's just cliches, but it's the truth. I mean, that's why they are things that you need. And so we turned a little corner there where, you know, we had the application, the toughness, and the concentration levels that allow us to win slightly different ways.
Look, I'll be honest. There's two, to me, huge surprises in the East. It's not the 76ers being the one seed. The Sixers always had the talent, okay? And putting Doc Rivers in charge of things there just feels like it's the type of accountability and the type of respect you needed at head coach with that team. It's not that the Bucks are the three seed. Milwaukee is proven to be underwhelming when it mattered most, and you just didn't know how long they could be the machine of the East. The two surprises are that the Nets, it seems to work. The trading for James Harden has seemed to really work. And those three guys haven't even played a lot this season. And Harden has bought in. And Kyrie, since coming back from his vague absence, has bought in. And Kevin Durant, when he's been out there, has been back to his normal, glorious pre-injury self. And that has to be a surprise. When they traded for James Harden, I said, what are you doing? This is totally combustible, and it has worked. That's the biggest surprise to me. And the second biggest surprise is the Brad Stevens once again is going to get a pass despite the Celtics being unbelievably underwhelming. I mean, they blew a 24-point lead yesterday. Kemba Walker, who knows? I mean, Kemba Walker, is he good? Is he not good? Is he injured? Is he not injured? Gordon Hayward leaves Boston and becomes an all-star. So somehow was an all-star before the Celtics. During the Celtics' reign, terrible, injured. And when he wasn't injured, he was terrible. And then leaves and becomes an all-star in Charlotte. I mean, I don't know. All I know is that there's an NCAA tournament being held in Indianapolis. Hinkle Fieldhouse going to be one of the sites. Brad Stevens should just resign as head coach of the Celtics and get on the first bus to Indy and just show up and offer to coach somebody in the NCAA tournament, because that's where he's good. That's where he's an effective coach. That's where he's great. The NBA, this ain't for him. 24-point, blew a 24-point lead to the Pelicans second half. Team's defense stinks. Outside shooting stinks. Hayward became an all-star once he left. Kemba stinks. I mean, what do we need to see here? Here's Clayton Kershaw, who says, despite only 1 year left in his deal in Los Angeles, no plans to retire anytime soon.
I'm on a year-to-year basis. You know, I want to reevaluate at the end of every year and see how we're doing as a family, myself personally, where we are as a team, and then just make a decision from there. So I have no intentions of hanging him up. You know, I'm only 32, Dave. I feel like I got a few more years left in the tank.
I would hate to see the Dodgers cut bait with Clayton Kershaw over money, because the Dodgers have all of the money. I mean, this is a front office that admits we won the World Series, and now let's keep signing everybody. Trevor Bauer, who's next? You know, they say they want to be piggish. They want to be pigs. So if that's the case, why can't you just pay Clayton Kershaw whatever he wants? You're going to go over the luxury tax threshold. You don't care about that. You paid Mookie Betts all the money. You know what? Don't let it be about that. Kershaw, even if he's the fifth starter in your rotation, which I think he's better than that, he's not going to retire in his early to mid-30s. So this should be a match made in dollars, and there's no reason for Clayton Kershaw not to be a Dodger after this year. And finally, here is David Pastrnak, member of the Bruins, after the Bruins played in the Winter Classic in beautiful Lake Tahoe.
It was beautiful. You know, I think personally, the thing that we play in both conditions, like with the sun and in the dark, you know, I think that was really great. The dark is beautiful too, you know. You get to play outside and overall it was an unbelievable experience, you know. It was a great bonding. We had some fun with the guys, you know, getting dressed up and stuff like that. So it's great win, you know.
So big day for Pastrnak and supposedly a big day for the NHL, and that is your sound check. But Bogues, we're going to ask you this question. Did it end up being egg on the face of the NHL? Because it looked gorgeous. When you have this rink right next to Lake Tahoe and the snow is gleaming and the sun is shining down, the backdrop was just insane. I mean, it was the prettiest Winter Classic ever. It was the prettiest NHL game ever held. But they couldn't hold it during the day when they wanted to because reflection had to move it to night. And I think it got a little embarrassing for the NHL. What'd you think?
Well, the game that was the embarrassment was Saturday, the Avalanche and the Golden Knights. And who would have thought that playing in the sun would have been an issue? But they played a period Saturday afternoon on crappy ice and said, you know what, we can't keep going. Come back at midnight Eastern, and we're going to finish this game. And then yesterday, they had already, during the week, they had pushed back Sunday. Well, actually, they moved up Sunday's game an hour at first to try and get it away from the peak afternoon sun. Then after Saturday, went, okay, never mind. We're going to play this bad boy from dusk until actual nighttime. So, yeah, I mean, the point of these two games was to get you to remember that the NHL is playing hockey right now. That
right,
a regular
yeah.
Caps-Rangers game wasn't bringing you in necessarily. Let me give you something pretty to look at, because obviously there was nobody there in the stand. There were no stands to watch this game. This is supposed to be a TV event on big NBC Saturday and Sunday afternoon, and they got an hour of bad hockey on Saturday on NBC and then told you to come back in 9 hours for the rest of the game on our cable channel. And then yesterday too, never mind, 3 p.m., 2 p.m., nope, we're going 7:30, and even waited until after 8 to start that one because of the sun again on their cable channel. So yes, the Winter Classic outdoor games is a great idea, but they need to be played at night exclusively moving forward.
I wonder why or how they made this mistake. They do all of these site checks. They have to set up the rink, obviously. You have to be out there during the day. You have to have people on the ice. You have to know the average temperatures. I mean, what happened on Saturday in Lake Tahoe was not rare. I don't understand how you can set this whole thing up and do all of this planning, which you do for months, if not years, and then suddenly the exact thing that would happen, a sunny Saturday afternoon in February in Lake Tahoe,
yeah,
and it catches you off guard. I don't understand how that happens.
Now, it was, I guess, in their defense, it was warmer than usual there this weekend, and that was maybe the bigger problem, because the sun, they've done this before. Like, they'll make you deal with the glare. They'll change ends mid-period to make it fair. So, like, the glare is one thing. The temperature on Saturday was making the ice just too mushy and melty, and they couldn't skate on it. Guys were just falling, trying to change directions and whatnot. So they can't keep having this problem. Like, the Winter Classic began as an afternoon thing on New Year's Day. Like, it was part of the process of waking up into a new year. They wanted it during the day. I get that. At night, there's more football games. But, like, now, not on New Year's Day, not up against the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl, put this bad boy at night under the lights. It just looks better to me, period. And then you avoid Mother Nature coming in and possibly ruining this for you.
Yeah, and they're also now running out of sites. It's like, this was a really cool thing. I still think it's a cool thing, but it was a really cool thing 10 years ago. And once you've done the football and baseball stadiums of the Northeast, they've done Los Angeles. Now they're trying to do, what, the Notre Dame Stadium a couple of years ago. Now you're at
right.
Lake Tahoe.
They've
now
done
you're
Air
starting
Force,
to get.
They've done the Naval Academy, so they've moved it around a little bit. They haven't done West Point yet, but that's so I'm sure that's on their radar too.
Didn't they do Air Force, though?
Yeah, they did Air Force, and they were supposed to do Naval Academy. Maybe that was one of the games that got lost last year in COVID, that the Caps were to play somebody at the Naval Academy. Maybe that game didn't actually happen, but it was scheduled at one point. And they definitely want to play outside in Vegas at some point. But yeah, you're right. No matter what, they're nearing the end of the list of obvious places to do.
There's only so many sites.
Yeah. Done Wrigley, done Fenway. They right. probably need to figure something else now.
Yeah, Yankee Stadium.
Maybe a battleship
as well.
like the NBA did, or college basketball did.
Or on Fight Island, where the UFC fights. All right, Bogues has our headline this morning as well. Mr. Bogues, where do we begin?
These ones are sponsored by Progressive Insurance. With insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. The Minnesota Timberwolves getting a new head coach as soon as today. They fired Ryan Saunders shortly after last night's 103-99 loss at the Knicks. They're expected to replace him with Raptors assistant Chris Finch. He and GM Gerson Rosas worked together in Houston a few years ago. It's been 12 years, by the way, since a team hired someone else's assistant to be their head coach in season. Back to Saunders, he had the T-Wolves at a league worst 7-24 this year, 43-94 since replacing Tom Thibodeau in January of 2019. His team, though, has been hit hard by injuries and by COVID this season. Let's go back to those Nets now. It is the longest undefeated road trip in team history, 5-5 after last night's 112-108 win at the Clippers. The last four victories came without Kevin Durant because of a hamstring issue. Kyrie will still welcome KD back when he's ready.
Well, we need him in all aspects, whether he's on the floor or not. He makes this thing work.
Kyrie scored 28 last night, 37 for James Harden. It is a six-game win streak overall for their Nets.
Bogues, Giannis, are you like me? Are you shocked that it's working this well for the Brooklyn Nets?
I'm shocked that they won six games in a row. I mean, they're due for the random dud or giving up a .140 to somebody. So I'm surprised they have at least smoothed out their defensive efforts to find a way to win this amount of games in a row against good teams. I mean, they beat the Lakers still with LeBron and Kawhi.
Exactly.
And Paul George were back last night for the Clippers. So these are legit wins that they're getting with all that offense and just enough defense.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I thought it would be far clunkier for them to put this thing together. I thought that fighting over roles and sulking or being... All three of them have their own kind of petulance and non-communicative problems. I thought that there was going to be that. Now, that could rear its ugly head in the playoffs. You could lead 3-1 in a series, collapse, then suddenly everybody's pointing fingers like the Clippers last year. They're not out of the woods yet. But I just didn't think it would be this good, this fast. They've ripped off six straight, as you said. They've beaten good teams. They've done it away from home and on the road. I've been impressed by the Nets being able to put it together.
Yeah, and Harden, again, I don't want to give him necessarily credit for this because of how bad it was in Houston, but he comes to Brooklyn and all of a sudden, we joked from the beginning that he looked thinner even, mm-hmm. but he shows up there and he's been amazing and he's barking at guys on the court, on the bench, like as a leader. Kyrie has very gingerly stepped to the side and been okay with not being the point guard and letting things run through Harden. And then they throw Durant back in the mix and all these other guys are working out well. I mean, they're going to lose again, obviously. But if this is them on this trajectory where all that offense and just enough defense, I mean, they're the best team in the East, at least.
Yep. And Steve Nash, it seems like if they don't respect him, at least they can coexist with Steve Nash. And the defense is an issue, obviously. But they're figuring out, as you said, a way to play just enough defense. So I thought it was going to take a lot longer for them to gel and to come together. But they've done it quicker than – I'm shocked they've done it this fast.
Giannis and Chris Middleton combined for 70 points in the Bucks' 128-115 home win over the Kings last night. That's a seven-game skid for Sacramento. The Nuggets losing in Atlanta 123-115. The Sixers losing to the Raptors in Tampa 110-103. But the Thunder won in Cleveland 117-101. The Cavs on a 10-game slide. Steven Strasburg wants to be ready for the start of the coming baseball season. He's been throwing bullpens since January after a lost 2020 thanks to a right-hand issue.
I've just had, chronic numbness in my thumb. It aggravated it every time I tried to throw and basically would just go from you know, numbness in my thumb to numbness in my whole hand.
Strasburg says a 15-minute carpal tunnel operation fixed everything. He threw just 5 innings over 2 starts before being shut down last summer. College Hoops last night, number 21, Wisconsin, snapped a 2-game skid, 68-51 at Northwestern. The Bruins won that NHL game at Lake Tahoe, 7-3 over the Flyers. Montreal losing in Ottawa, 3-2 in overtime. The Jets won in OT in Vancouver, 4-3. Max Homa won the Genesis Invitational on the second playoff hole with Tony Finau. He's now had 10 runner-up finishes since his last victory.
Wow.
And Christopher Bell, yeah, that's right. He's 10
wow.
times. He
ten
has finished
them.
Second,
oh my
torturing
God.
Tony Finau. And Christopher Bell got the first NASCAR Cup victory of his career at the Daytona Road Course. DA, back to you.
Man, 2 races at NASCAR, 2 first-time winners ever in the first 2 races. Pretty cool. When we come back on the show, this Deion Sanders story over the weekend is so bizarre. It's so bizarre. He claims somebody stole his stuff during his coaching debut, and then his school said, no, nobody stole it. So what's the truth? You'll hear the weird audio coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Grab a surge protector. You're about to be zapped.
Ha-ha! We did it! We did it, Karen! We did it! We did it, Karen! I need that costume, Karen! I need the dodgeballs, Karen! How can you flush the dodgeballs, Karen?
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
The DA Show, every single morning here on the DA Show, CBS Sports Radio's airwaves, hundreds of affiliates nationwide and north of the border. And March Madness is right around the corner. And this weekend, CBS has 2 full days of college hoops and triple headers. The action starts on Saturday, noon Eastern, with a battle in the Big 12 between Texas and Texas Tech. Then on Sunday, 3 more games, capped off with a late afternoon Big 10 showdown when Iowa takes on Ohio State. 2 college hoops triple headers on Saturday and Sunday, beginning at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. The road to the Final Four is on CBS. So speaking of that bet, I beat Mraz in the bet of the New England Patriots. He thought the Pats would be the number 1 pick in the NFL draft. I knew better. And so we put money on that, and the money being loser had to don a Patriots costume, like a Ben Franklin, Paul Revere type of costume. The other guy gets to dump clam chowder on his head and then throw dodgeballs at him. Believe me, I haven't forgotten this bad boy, but I'm waiting until the weather gets a little warmer, and I think we're going to build a nice big event. Going to build out an event for this bad boy. I'm going to wait until Mraz is back. He's off for a couple of days this week. When he's back, I'm going to announce the plans for this. But we have the plans in the works now for Mraz to wear a 2X sized Ben Franklin Patriot costume. Just think about the guys in Foxborough that wear those costumes and shoot off the muskets after Patriots touchdowns. He's going to wear one of those. I'm going to dump clam chowder on his head and then throw dodgeballs at him from a very close range. And it's going to be glorious. Glorious. So let me just try to set up the Deion Sanders story and see if you can follow along. Deion is the head coach at Jackson State, a historically black college, HBCU. And Jackson State played Edward Waters on Sunday. Now, Edward Waters is not a person, not a coach. It's a school. Edward Waters is a historically black college in the state of Florida. So, interestingly, this is Jackson State versus a team in Jacksonville. And as JDM tweets, good morning, DA. Deion Sanders is the head coach of Jackson State in Jackson, Mississippi, not Jacksonville State University, which is in Alabama. This fact alone would likely blow Mraz's mind. Hashtag, have fun with your geography. So that's a little context here. Also, Edward Waters plays in one or two levels below Jackson State. Jackson State plays in FCS, so that's just the level below normal Division I. So that's the North Dakota states of the world, etc. So Edward Waters plays in the NAIA with some D2 schools mixed in. They're trying to get up to D2. So they're well below Jackson State. And I believe, if I'm reading this right, this is Edward Waters' only game of the spring. So you might imagine Jackson State should do pretty well in this. And they did. They won 53-0. And I think this was Dion's first game on the sideline, because his first game against Alcorn State was canceled because of COVID. I think Alcorn State had a forfeit because of COVID. So this was his first game on the sideline. So Jackson State wins 53-0. You have Troy Aikman on the sideline supporting Dion. Dion's a head coach of an FCS team that just won his debut, 53-0. Wow. He goes into the post-game press conference, and instead of it being an excited, positive, encouraging scene, Dion is visibly upset. In fact, it seems like he's almost on the verge of tears at one point. And Dion says that the reason he's so upset is because all of his stuff, his credit cards, his wallet, his phone, were all stolen from a Ziploc bag in his coaching office. He says this during his post-game press conference. Let's play some clips of this.
God bless you. Appreciate you and everything. I'm pissed off right now because I have mixed emotions. We won. Kids played really well. But while the game was going on, somebody came in and stole every darn thing I had in my locker room, in the coach's office. Yeah. Credit cards, wallet, watches. Thank God I had all my necklaces. How? So when I talk about equality and raising the standards, and that goes for everyone, man. Not just the people on the field, not just the coaches, not just the teachers, not just the faculty, but that's everybody, security in everybody. So how do you think it feels coming back after just teary-eyed because the guys presented me with the game ball, one of the best moments I've ever had in my professional sports career emotionally. And then you go into your locker room, your coach's office, to digress, and you notice and you don't even have a phone to call your mama, to call your girl, to call your kids, because it's been stolen.
I hate to laugh, but this is so bizarre. It's so bizarre because moments after Dion says this, again, he's like on the verge of tears. The university says they weren't stolen. What? The university tells Sports Illustrated the items were simply misplaced after being moved for safekeeping and that they've been returned to Dion. Oh, well, okay, that was just a misunderstanding. During the game, somebody came into the coach's office, maybe realized the Dion stuff was accessible or something, cleared it out, put it away for safekeeping, put it in a safe or another locked office. Dion didn't know this. And then after the press conference, they bring it in and say, hey, we just didn't want anything to happen to your stuff. Case closed, right? Wrong! Dion then takes to Twitter and says, whomever putting out the lie that my belongings wasn't stolen is lying. Lying, all caps. Dun, dun, dun. My belongings were taken out of a zipped bag in my office, and more items were taken as well from my office. More items. We have retrieved them since being reported. My staff member witnessed the crime. Hashtag truth. Whoa! All right, so now the university says your stuff wasn't stolen, but Dion's saying, no, they were stolen. The crime was witnessed. Now, you might ask yourself, well, wait a second, Dion. Your staff member saw your stuff being stolen and didn't step in? He later tweeted to that question, a staff member walked in on the theft being committed, but she couldn't fight a dude off. Whoa! So it's a female staff member. She sees a guy rifling through Dion's stuff, can't fight him off. The guy gets away with the stuff. But apparently the stuff was recovered. Jackson State says it's an isolated incident and they will review their security protocols. But their VP and director of athletics, their AD, saying, quote, "We refuse to let this dampen the victory for our JSU Tigers." What do you do with this story? What do you do? I mean, here's where I'm going to give Dion credit, okay? I think Dion takes over, and there's been now some momentum for historically black colleges and their football programs, their basketball programs, recruits going to these schools, and that's great. These have been historically very significant athletic programs dating back to the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. You know, these are schools that produced the Walter Paytons, the Buck Buchanans, the Willie Laniers, you know, the John Stallworths. They are amazing NFL Hall of Fame players that have come through these schools, and it is worth making sure that these schools don't just fade into oblivion and that there is an understanding of the value of them and their history and all of that. So I think this is great. And Dion going to one of them and trying to build up the program and put it on a national level, I think is awesome. Okay. And I think what comes with this is some fits and starts. Like, Dion is the most notable thing to happen to Jackson State football in decades. So, you know, your security is going to have to be like it is, maybe not at Ohio State, but at a bigger school, you know? And all of these things, season ticket sales and security and stadium ops and facilities and all of this stuff. And so I get Dion coming in and saying, hey, we've got to be better at everything. And this is a pretty good example of us having to be better. Okay, great, I get it. But also, I mean, and I get that your pride is hurt as well. Like, you're the head coach and you've got to worry about this type of stuff. You know, this doesn't happen in other places. But it's credit cards, which, I mean, you just cancel, right? Is that big a deal? And it's a phone, I guess. Well, how many of us have lost a phone anywhere? Happens all the time. And is it enough to sidetrack your entire press conference after your kind of historic opening victory? And this is where I kind of feel like Dion's making a lot out of it, because if the stuff was immediately grabbed by whoever, like if the school is saying it wasn't stolen, it was misplaced, and we've got it back, how stolen could it have been, right? Dion takes all of this time and totally overshadows the win by talking about how upset he is, which kind of feels very prime for the course, if you will. Very kind of, it's got to be about Dion. Dion's hurt. Dion's upset. Dion, it's Dion stuff, where it's really like the kids just won a football game. That's the significant part, isn't it? Can't you just be like, okay, maybe there was a misunderstanding. Let me just go to the podium and talk about football and we'll address this afterward. Like, do you need to make it a thing? And again, how stolen could they have been if the stuff got retrieved immediately after the press conference? I mean, immediately. So there's something weird that happened here. And of course, it's not okay to steal anybody's belongings out of their office, but it feels like Dion wanted to make it out to be like an Ocean's 11 crime. And it definitely wasn't that, because they got it almost immediately. And then they said it wasn't stolen. And he says, no, it was stolen. They're lying. And this is like the first chapter of Dion's Jackson State tenure is going to be fighting with your administration and calling them liars? A bizarre way to start things off. And Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, with a wonderful headline, just all types of perfect. Prime Fib at Watch DA. How do we top that this morning? I don't know.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.